And so with the options that I was not seeing on shelves, and then in addition to that, the homogenous options, I was basically always seeing dolls that, if, they were black, it was often a white doll that was painted black, and then it had, basic features, and it didn't have features that were truly authentic or hair texture that was authentic. And then the sense of what that leaves a child, especially a child of color, in self-doubt and a lack of building their self-esteem. And so instead of me really waiting on that to change and waiting for these big corporations to do something about it, I said I wanted to do something about it.
Welcome to the No More Reasonable Doubt podcast. In season two of this podcast, it's made to help Black professionals start passion projects so they can expand their impact in the world and at work. In each episode, you can expect an interview with a Black professional who has a 9-to-5 just like you. And they've also launched a passion project into this world. You'll also get episodes with specific topics and lessons to help you move that passion project forward. I'm your host and fellow passion project starter, Mike Ambassador Bruni. Let's start the show. Welcome to another episode of No More Reasonable Doubt. Today, our special guest is Flora Egbe Ide. Flora, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
We are very lucky to have you today. The first question I like to ask our guest is, what do you do for full-time work?
Okay, we're hopping right in. So for full-time work, I work at Target at their headquarters based in Minneapolis, and I specifically am a senior brand marketing manager, leading our Black American marketing strategy. So really thinking about how are we ultimately, I developed the strategy for how are we growing and building our relationship with our Black consumers, but most importantly, how are we as well performing from a sales standpoint and guest engagement standpoint, and how are we showing up in the community? So really thinking about the strategic lens for how does Target look at our growth audiences, especially looking at the Black consumer, and how are we really attracting them with passion points, with the values that align, and having culturally relevant products and showing up with great experiences throughout the year.
Thank you for that. Now, what is your purpose or passion project, and how long has it been in existence?
Yes. So, my passion or my purpose, I think at its core, is really rooted in, this notion of elevating and supporting and empowering girls of color. So that's why I created a multicultural doll and book company called Courage Dolls. And it's really focused on, kind of the words I was just now saying, elevating, educating, and encouraging girls of color to be unstoppable. I actually started the company when I was also a student at Babson College, and I was there with you when I was getting my MBA. So it's been, a little over 4 years that I've had the company, and it truly was very much focused on being able to see greater representation on toy shelves, knowing that so much when I was growing up, seeing the toy shelves and knowing that there wasn't much dolls that existed that looked like girls who looked like me, or let alone girls of color today, it was something that always stuck with me. And it was just an area where I felt that, okay, I can wait, all this time for the big, larger corporations to finally truly make some change in this space. And there was very minor ones. Typically, I either saw, a lack of options, either dolls on shelves that they were barely, I did my own research where I would visit numerous toy stores and retailers, and I would see that less than 40% of the dolls on the shelf were even dolls of color. And if you think about the fact that children of color today under the age, I believe, of 18, more than 50% are children of color. And so that's not even accounting for Generation Alpha, which is the very younger generation after Gen Z. And so with the options that I was not seeing on shelves, and then in addition to that, the homogenous options, I was basically always seeing dolls that, they were black. It was often a white doll that was painted black, and then it had, basic features, and it didn't have features that were truly authentic or hair texture that was authentic. And then the sense of what that leaves a child, especially a child of color, in self-doubt and a lack of building their self-esteem. And so instead of me really waiting on that to change and waiting for these big corporations to do something about it, I said I wanted to do something about it. So when I ended up going to grad school, that was something that was really the big catalyst moment for me to begin working truly on bringing my passion and my purpose more to life.
So the next question that I usually ask, and I'm going to give you space if there's anything else you want to add, because the next question I usually ask is around, tell us about your project's origin story.
Okay.
And I felt like you told us a lot there. Is there anything else, as I phrased the question as, tell us the origin story. Why did you start this project? You know, what's the fire behind it? Is there anything else you would add to what you've already shared?
Yes, absolutely. So I will tell you the moment that made me think about truly this, this being something I want to turn into something into life, or just think about it. So when I was in high school, I was sitting in health class and I was watching this short documentary called A Girl Like Me. And it was studying the impact of colorism on young Black girls. During the course of this documentary, the female, she conducted this study called the Dahl test. It was a test that was done initially in the 1940s by two Black psychologists to study the effects of segregation on young Black children. It was a test that was done where it took a group of children, Black children, white children, and they were given a Black doll and a white doll. And they were asked various questions such as which doll's prettier, which doll's smarter, so on and so forth. And when that test was done in the 1940s and I was watching it being done in the 2000s in this class, my health class, and the Black children chose the white doll when it came to anything positive, and they chose the Black doll when it came to anything negative. And then when the question was asked, which doll do you associate with more, the Jackson, the Black children, they said the Black doll. And it was so disheartening to see kids who were 4 years old or 5 years old already having ultimately a sense of internalized racism. And it was that kind of was just going through my mind so much sitting in health class. I'm a junior in health class. And I didn't know, honestly, what I wanted to do with that emotion. I didn't know. That was just for me, the spark that just stood with me. And I was just like, you know what? Like, toys are something that really help build a child's imagination. It's one of the first items a kid gets when they're growing up to help just spark their creativity, build their imagination, and especially for young girls and how they see themselves, and having products, especially for young Black girls, to see themselves represented. And the notion that these young kids were not feeling a sense of that they were good enough, or that they matter, that they were beautiful, that they were all these things, because of either what negative images they were seeing around them or a lack of positive images that they were seeing around, or products. And so for me, I just honestly had that thought. It just stood with me. And diversity and inclusion has always been something so important to me. Like, I come from, I'm a first generation American. My mother is from Grenada. My father is from Nigeria. I have one brother. They all live right now in New Jersey. And I grew up in a household where, you know, seeing appreciation for my history and culture was celebrated. And then I had dolls as well of different ethnicities, but not many Black dolls I could find. You know, there was Addie, the American Girl doll. That was one of the first, or probably one of the main Black dolls. But not until I got older did I realize that Addie was a runaway slave. And I was like, man, really, American Girl, runaway slave? But that was all you had. Addie was the one you only had. And ultimately, as years went on, and like I said, watching this documentary, and then really just, that was, you know, the moment that just served as a spark. And as I mentioned earlier, this notion of, like, I perused toy shelves. I actually spent some time joining a doll club years later because I didn't know how to get into the doll industry. I didn't know really what that was about or how to enter it. And I kind of went through various avenues, but until I got to ultimately grad school is when I was like, you know what, I really, this is just something that stood with me and just stuck with me since high school. If this can't go away, and this is something I know I care about, and I'm still not seeing changes on toy shelves, like, let me go figure out how I can go create the solution.
I love the figure it outness of that. And you have probably just liberated someone who will be listening to this, because there's to hear a couple of things. One is that I couldn't let it go. That's one. Two is like, I didn't necessarily know how, but I joined a doll club. Like, so understanding that sometimes action is just, it's learning. It's answering a question. It isn't necessarily building right away. But it's but building capacity, right? Building understanding before you can move forward. So thank you for that liberation moment.
Yeah, and I think just to add on to that, like, because I love that statement, that liberation moment, and like this learning, because for me, I think learning, I think I'm a type of person that soaks up like a sponge. It's like I never stop learning. Like, I'm reading things daily, even in my job. Like, I read things all the time just to learn, because things are always changing. Culture moves so fast. And when I was in college, it was the first time then that I actually, I did an internship. I interned at a toy company. So one of the things I did, I guess I didn't mention before, but like, I also decided to intern. I interned at Jack Specific, which is like a big toy company, where I was like, you know what, like, once again, as I mentioned, I didn't know anyone in the toy industry. I didn't know the space, but I was like, how do I just get my feet wet? And so I interned at a toy company and had an opportunity to more so learn about electronics, toys, and like how to understand that. That wasn't dolls, but it was getting exposure in that space. And then when I graduated is when I joined this doll club. I was the youngest person in the group, but it was a great learning about the history and the collection of dolls, especially Black dolls, because I joined a Black doll club. And it was amazing. And just seeing the appreciation that the women I got a chance to work with and just meet tell me about the history of dolls. And then not until I went to Babson did I also intern at Hasbro. So I also then took another opportunity to also learn. So for me, it was always still like, how can I take advantage of the opportunity to learn? How can I try to be in spaces to learn while I was still trying to develop what did I want to do with this business, or did I want to bring this to life, or how can I just surround myself in spaces to just soak up as much information as I can?
Is there a point where you hesitated to start this project?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Absolutely.
Oh, and let me give you the part B of that. What got you over the hump?
Damn, that's a good question. So Babson made me nervous being at Babson. So for those on this call who don't know, like Mike and myself, we went to Babson for the MBA program, but like Babson College is legitimately, like, I swear Shark Tank had to have gotten its whole method and model, like, you know, business model from Babson. The idea of you're pitching all the time, you're always have to be ready to kind of put business idea out there and be very vulnerable. And I remember when I started at Babson and we had to take that entrepreneurial thought and action course. That's kind of the mantra of Babson and what we stand for, ETNA. And I remember taking that course. That's one of the first courses you take, the ETNA course. And the professor told us that, like, hey, you need to, you know, actually share your business with people. This is going to be an opportunity. You get 3 minutes and 3 slides to do this rocket pitch. And I was so nervous because my background, for those who may not know, my background's in advertising. Prior to starting my business and working at Target, like, I came from the advertising space. I worked on account management. So I worked in multicultural advertising, and like direct response advertising. And so coming from a creative background, there were times where I kind of felt this imposter syndrome, because I'm like, I'm in a business school where a lot of my classmates are coming from spaces of family businesses or consulting or business management, development, tech, and I'm coming from a creative agency space. So that was already something I doubted myself in. And then I doubted myself in the fact that, like, having a toy idea is this something that's going to resonate? And having a toy idea that was focused on girls of color. I was the only Black female in my class. There was only other one Black male in my class. And so all those things were going through my head at the moment that I was like, oh my goodness, I got to pitch. I got to, like, this class is not going to understand what I'm talking about. Like, they're not going to resonate. They're not going to connect with it. And I remember just truly being so nervous and scared because that was going to be, Mike, the first time I was ever going to pitch. I never pitched Garage Dolls ever until that moment. And it was in a space that I was like, I don't know these students. I don't know if I could trust them. And I pitched it. I practiced like crazy, pitched the idea. I didn't have a product. I just had an image. And my classmates like loved it. I gave this story that I tried to build empathy. I tried to imagine that, like, okay, if my classmates may not understand maybe what it means to have a doll that looks like them, because maybe, you know, I guess, you know, maybe that's not maybe their experience. And my class was predominantly male. And so I tried to paint a picture of, imagine going into a toy store and you are looking around for this awesome item that you want. And then you see nothing that actually reflects you. Nothing you see in this space on the shelves or anything you want to buy actually looks like you. You don't feel a connection to anything because nothing feels like it includes you. And that feeling of not being included, not being seen, not being valued. And that was what got my classmates to really be on board with, like, oh my goodness. They were like, I don't know what it's like to necessarily experience not having a doll that looks like me, but I know that feeling of not feeling a sense of belonging. And it was that, you know, and after the pitch, I actually was one of the winners because we did a whole judging thing where the classmates had to actually vote on the top pitches, and I was one of the winners. And it was in that moment, like I said, my first pitch, but it also became a scary pitch that also showed that, like, oh my goodness, I'm in a space where there's people who don't look like me, who I'm assuming don't have a similar experience to me, but I was able to connect with them in a deeper way to be able to build this empathy, and they understood why this was so important. And they understood also the economic impact of having this too. And so I go back to that moment. There was many other times where, you know, just being an entrepreneur of color, navigating that in terms of like, okay, I'm not getting funding or I'm not getting support, should I give up, da, da, da. But I think for the sake of your question, that moment was like both the moment of like, oh my goodness, should I be here? I shouldn't be doing this. And then when I did see how it paid off, I realized it was more so me being more nervous and having more of that fear of myself versus them putting that on me. It was on me. That was me being fearful versus like, let me go do this. And maybe not everyone's going to connect, but I got to speak my truth. And I know why this is important. I know I'm the right person to do this.
You know, one of the things that's really interesting to me, you know, there's the, there's the kind of like speak your truth. It's really important to me. But what you did was, it sounded like you went even deeper than that. And you said, I already know this is important to me. I know it matters to me, but the audience is different. And mm-hmm. and it almost sounded like you believed that there was a human-centric, something human-centric was happening here. That you were able to, and who knows, this may be your advertising background, but you were able to get to the core of the feeling of where the empathy could lie. Because if you're like, hey, ain't no dolls that look like me, like, can't relate, don't know what it feels like to have a doll. But it wasn't about that. It really is about not being seen, not being included, the impact of that. And you're leaving money on the table, son. Like, you know, like, oh yeah, I get it now. So I love how you share that with us. So now, the next question I have for you is, as I've been exploring this space of passion and purpose projects that people are working on, especially as they're working, how do you find time, or how did you make time for your project?
I think still to this day is something that I work on, because I still work on Garage Dolls while I'm still working at Target. I've been at Target now for 3.5 years. I've had my business for more than 4 years. And Target knew when I started at Target, I told them that I have a business I'm developing. I was like, I just let that be known. Not everyone would do that. I wasn't at the time like so big, and I really love the Target brand. But at the time, I was so focused on like, I need to get my business off the ground. Like, I'm not going to go to a corporation. I need to stay here, da da da. But Target actually embraced it, I think, by me being forthcoming. And I made sure, of course, that my job, you know, my business wasn't affecting my job, but like my job, all these elements there. But to your question, it is something that I practice quite often. One of the things that I started doing this year, more so than previous years, is that this year I realized that I have to write down like daily goals. So one thing I realized this year, I took some time last year and I was just like, you know what? I want to revamp my business strategy. Now that I've had my business around for a little bit, I've been able to really talk to customers, potential customers, get surveys out there, understand like what's the persona of the person who I'm trying to attract and go after. What do they believe in? What's their values? What media do they consume? What influences do they like? What is it about your family that they care about? Why do they want something like this? What's the connection to the children? And once I started to get tighter in that and learn things from events that I would do in person, I was like, you know what? I need to revamp my business strategy. Think about the bigger long term of what I'm trying to do. And then let me break things out by quarter. And then let me try to see what daily goals I can try to just hit upon. And so this year, like I do a list where I actually make goals daily, where I put my personal goals for the day, and then I put my business goals for the day. And so my personal goals, I always start with like prayer and scripture. Let me try to work out. Let me make sure that, I like made time to eat some food. You never know, remote learning, you know, sometimes you just forget to eat. And all these, and then for, you know, for, and then I put some for work and then like Target goals, what I need to get done to make sure I try to, and then my business goals, which is like, hey, my social media partner, she sent me, you know, a list of editorial content in the Trello board. So I need to review, provide feedback on it. I need to make sure I pay this invoice. Hey, I need to meet with the supplier and check in on that. Oh, hey, I'm going to be talking with Mike. Let me make sure that I keep that on my calendar. So that is something I started since January 1st, because I said this year is going to be the year I really try to make sure I'm doing that. And I, you know, predominantly done that almost every day. Some days I've been a little off, but predominantly more than I've ever done. That has been a helpful way. And then for things that I just don't get to in that day, I, you know, push it to the next day. And so sometimes it builds upon it, but it reminds me like, Flora, hey, maybe you're having too many goals listed for the day. That serves as like this like reminder in my mind. And then I'm like, okay, I need to make sure I get this done today so that I can, you know, put time for tomorrow. Like tomorrow, I'm going to devote my time to like mailing some packages I need to get out for my business. And so it's something that I realized that over the years that when I told myself, I can just do this and manage that. Yeah, I realized for me, I have to practice writing it down and then ultimately being comfortable with some things that may not happen, what I got to prioritize. And some things I'm like, you know what, this will get done the next day. And I will just put that down the list to be like, I need to get this done by exactly this date.
Thank you for that. So time is one thing. The other thing that I find people run into, especially if they're, you know, they may be working, they may have volunteer obligations, family obligations. So there's time. But the next question is around, do you have any rituals or practices when it comes to energy? So the workday is over. And I know, you know, doing a couple of these podcasts, one thing has been interesting is that the question is kind of different during COVID, right? Because you're home, like everything is for, well, most people are home, yeah. Or let me just say many people are home. So it's like this continuum, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, do you have any rituals that allow you to get energy so that you can work on your business, you know, let's say after work?
Yeah, so one thing I definitely do is really random, but like I try to watch like an episode of The Office. Like I have to, one thing I try to do, like I try to make sure that when I close my work laptop, I give myself a bit of a grace to transition then to business, because my mindset is kind of really wonky, and then I'm there's some days at work where I'm just like, oh my goodness, I just can't even think about anything else. But what I do sometimes is like, you know what, let me actually like, you know, eat something now, or let me be able to like, I for The Office just relaxes me. During COVID, like I've watched The Office probably 4 times over, all the episodes. It used to be on Netflix, but now that it came down, it's on NBC Peacock. So I just did a promo for NBC Peacock subscription.
We're going after them. You guys got to sponsor the show.
And so that has been something that just like eases my mind and gives me joy. Like you got to put those packets of joy. And then I hop into business, and then I'll like, you know, put on my headphones, and then like, okay, like I said, I will go to my notebook and see what do I need to still sign off on with my business. Like, oh wait, I like, and a lot of times what I've been doing now is that there's like, I have business meetings during the week. Like I have like a core business meeting with my social media manager once a week. And then we're checking out what content are we doing for the week? Like what's kind of our marketing approach? Like how are we maybe looking out for opportunities to be featured, or just like, you know, just more, mainly more so looking at the site and social media content and trends. And then on the weekends is like ultimately where I try to put more of my effort. Like I'm spending a lot more of my hours on the weekends versus on the nights. On the nights, I try to get some of the things I just need to respond back to emails on. And then on the weekends, I put more hours into like, if it's things that regarding strategy, if there's things that regard like doing some like competitive reading or something, or if there's things where like, hey, I'm trying to, you know, have an opportunity to connect with a partner, and let me look up something here and let me see, can we do a partnership, or I need to connect my supplier. So my weekends, I feel, is a where I try, because then I have more of a clear head. But if it's during the week, I'm typically watching The Office first, and that's then I get awesome. Into business.
You also mentioned that you put on your headphones. what's playing when you put it in? Or do you just put them
Ooh,
in?
Okay. So, lately, okay, the song I played, because I looked it up on Spotify, because when they do your year wrap of what songs you played the most, the song that I played the most last year was Pharrell and Jay-Z's Entrepreneur song.
And that's not even that old.
It's not. But like that one, I loved it so much. Like I would go to the park and work out and just listen to it. It just energized me. It just energized me. And it was like the lyrics to the song, you gotta let go. Mm-hmm. Because you're gonna fly. That's like, all right. I'm messing up the lyrics.
If you wanna
right
fly,
now, I can sing it. But when I say it, if you want to fly, you know, like Black Ambition, like he's like your Black Ambition and all the, I love it. I love the music video for it. I love the celebration of Black, just like Black excellence and seeing community and seeing collaborative success and building generational wealth. And I saw how they showcase that. The most pivotal scene in that film, in that video was one of the last things where they had the Broadway dancer, the Broadway singer. And that moment where, you know, he was able to buy his ancestors who were enslaved, like the house that they were enslaved in. He was able to buy that. Like, if that is not, you know, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams, if that is not what that moment represents,
he was able to buy it cash. I actually know his best friend. So we knew it was coming.
Oh, awesome.
We knew it was coming. They were like, just keep an eye out. And at the end, and actually we knew of the story when he bought that house, because it was a house, like when he came, they were like kind of like, you know, like here's the price. Like there was some kind of thing to it where like where he was like, here you go, here's the cash. Like, here's the cash. You know, he paid cash. So yeah, it's a really beautiful and powerful song, and you're bringing me back to my hip hop affirmations and how I need to dissect that song and put some stuff out for the for the people. But okay, that's cool. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. It's basically that or Beyonce's Black Parade. It's kind of like, right now it's been Black Parade, Beyonce, Entrepreneur with Pharrell and Jay-Z, and then Miguel. Cool. I love anything Miguel.
I'm just jotting that down. So I can explore myself tonight.
Yes.
How has, right, I have this hypothesis. And this is one of those questions that I've been massaging this question because I have a hypothesis and I'm thinking this is the way to look at it. I have a hypothesis that sometimes the work that you do outside of work positively impacts your work, your 9-to-5. Is that the case for you? Mm-hmm. Do you have a story you can share?
Yes. So I will say that I, even though work is always up and down, but I am blessed to be in a role where I get to honestly celebrate Black 365. That's my role and that's what I do in my business. So it's like, it's pretty amazing. So as I mentioned earlier, like I lead our Black American marketing strategy. And so I spend my time at Target really working on looking at like, how are we truly, you know, showing up and, you know, building our relationship. And of course our sales, like sales with the Black consumer, but doing it in the most meaningful way. What action are we taking that's meaningful and how are we showing up? And so, and how are we also doing it in a way that is building and closing gaps, whether it be financial gaps, whether it be sales gaps, whether it be just brand perception gaps, and how are we actually making marked improvements on Black lives beyond just being a retailer? And so one of the things that has been really pivotal for us at Target has been, how are we investing in Black content, but Black creators and entrepreneurs? That has been something that has been, you know, a key element of what the brand has been doing and is growing. And so I lead a platform at Target called Black Beyond Measure, which is a always on platform that our team launched last January of last year during Black, when we were starting our Black History Month campaign. And it was really rooted in this idea of like, you know, us as Black people have limitless potential, even despite the obstacles that we navigate through, this idea of hope and resiliency and optimism, that something greater and something good is still on its way. And that there's no limit to what we can achieve as Black people, whether through our ancestors, whether it be the next generation, whether it be the present. And so Black Beyond Measure became this decorative statement in that. And knowing that there was a lot of work that we were doing that was focused around celebrating and supporting and investing in Black entrepreneurs, for me as a Black entrepreneur, like, it was always very pivotal for me to, when I would talk to colleagues and partners about like, okay, we're, you know, like, I always would go out of my way to make sure that if we're bringing in new brands into Target and they were like, hey, how do we figure out how to do our marketing, da, da, da. Like I always had conversations regularly with a lot of these businesses because I'm just like, hey, like I don't, you know, I work in retail. I understand that being a small Black owned company, when you don't have all the resources, how do you navigate a behemoth of a corporation? And so for me, thinking about, I wanna see these Black businesses not just survive, but thrive. And similarly, my own company, I want to be able to see, you know, that support. And so having the idea of access to resources and information or mentorship is important for me having that. And then investment as me as a Black entrepreneur. And because I have that lens and I think more entrepreneurially, when I interact as well with some of the amazing Black founders and owners that we sell at Target, or those who are interested in getting into Target, I just come at it with a more empathetic lens, knowing what they are navigating through as a small business. Because sometimes we as a brand, we're just like, hey, can you, you know, send 1,000 samples and da-da-da. And in my mind, I'm like, if we don't pay for those samples, like, that's taking a lot of their inventory that they could have been selling. And now we're giving it away to guests, you know, for them to get engaged. But, like, we need to make sure we're paying any of our, if we're asking them for samples for events, we better be paying them for that, because I know that they have a small base. I know that all these elements here. And so I just say all that to say that I think having the lens of being a small entrepreneur and being a Black-owned entrepreneur, and then being someone who works in retail who engages with entrepreneurs, I do come and look at it as like, what barriers or what ways are we removing barriers to make sure that our entrepreneurs, our small entrepreneurs, are being able to thrive and succeed. And that also helps me learn about how to do my business better and what are the barriers that maybe I see exist and what I would want to see even from any partners or corporations.
I really see it. I see a circle as you say this, like a reciprocal, you know, sometimes circle can be bad. We're going in circles, not that way. this is more a reciprocal circle. As you talk about your business and the lens and what you know, and then also the same thing that comes back of what you're learning, and things that you can go, here are things that I may have to navigate for my own business. And I also hear, I mean, in that same sense, taking, you know, what you're learning through your work at Target, it may not directly through your work, but by working at Target, is also the thought of when, if there's something you're working on, you can propose different things. Because you can say, oh no, I've seen this done, like in a corporation. So I understand that you're telling me it has to be done this way. However, you know, I've seen, I can actually help you make that change. I know it sounds hard, but I can help you make that change. And you mentioned empathy for the, you know, small business, the black owned business. And I also hear not just empathy, but there's this practicality. Like, right, this is not entrepreneurship at arm's length, right? This is understanding what it takes to make things happen. So as the example you gave with the sample, and, you know, the classic business school case is that someone gets into a big store and then their business fails because they can't deliver. They can't deliver the amount that quickly.
Yeah.
And the other side is, you know, they can't wait that net, whatever it is, you know, net 90 or net whatever it is before they get paid. So, you're able to bridge that gap. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And I get to work. I get to work with some amazing people at Target across like our supplier diversity team, our multicultural merchandise team, our Target accelerators team, like our corporate responsibility team, partners who are also similarly very much invested in seeing these businesses and entrepreneurs thrive. And I think it's great to just see other teams who also understand what we're like, hey, like one thing we try to make sure we're not doing too much of is like, hey, are we trying to ask one entrepreneur to do all these speaking engagements? But like, I will have my accelerators partners, like, are we paying? Are we making sure we're paying these entrepreneurs to do all these speaking engagements? Like, are they getting paid? Like it's probably them and another person that work with them on their team, or they have a small team, or they're contracting some people as their business while they're still trying to ensure they have the proper inventory to stay on shelf. And so having those type of lens and mindset, because I know what that is like for me as well. And so I think it's awesome being able to have having an entrepreneurial mindset that you can apply in a company in an entrepreneurial way, because you can leverage those as transferable skills that, you know, I think, and I believe so, and I know that, you know, my partners at Target really appreciate, and I appreciate that as well, because I'm able to take that when I go back to my own business and think about, how do I think of it? If I want to go into a space of retail, if I want to think about broadening my distribution one day, what are key things I need to keep in mind? Or what are things I would want to know? And then if I'm talking to my peers at Target who are working with entrepreneurs, it's like, hey, how are we making sure we're keeping in mind these nuances? Or how are we designing our policies that really keep in mind, especially like Black entrepreneurs and what they navigate through? So then we're not putting roadblocks we're actually bringing down those barriers and allowing them to have just as much of an opportunity to grow as any other business.
You know, with the part around paying for the speaking, I'm just glad when I asked you to be on the podcast, you didn't say, you got to pay me. Yeah, how much?
I know you like. I know. You're like,
oh no, you think I didn't ask you to pay. There is an invoice on the way. Like, oh no, the invoice is on the way. Don't you worry.
No, you were good. You were good.
But yeah, that's right. So we're getting close to the ending here. And here's another question that I've been kind of massaging, right? Because there's someone who's on the fence with a passion or a purpose project that they've been thinking about, something potentially that they can't let go of. As I like to call it, the you familiar with the movie New Jack City? So I think we talked about this before, but yeah. it's that Pookie moment, you know. It be calling me, but they're on the fence. Yeah, man, it be calling me, but they're on the fence. You know, they're on the fence for one reason or another. So that is to paint the context. The question I want to ask you is really like, I want to ask you what advice would you give them, but I want the advice to come from a place of, I could not have given them this advice when I first started. I only can tell them this because I went through the fire, and looking back, I'm like, yo, there's no way I could have told you this, you know, 4 years ago. There's no way. Like that is the thing I'm looking at. What have you learned that you want to share with someone who's on the fence?
I would say one thing, like for someone starting off or just someone unsure whether or not they want to pursue what they want to pursue or not. I'm trying to think what would be something I did not know that I know that I would like to hand. One thing that I think that comes to mind is the idea of I think the idea of me holding back, I feel like I was holding back a part of myself.
Please say more.
I think I was holding, like, when I, and granted, not every company is going to be cool with it. I cannot say what company or, like, how people buy, but even though I told Target that I had a business I was developing, like I very much kept it silent on the side of that. It was not until someone followed me on social media, my coworker, and they were like, wait, you have a business or you're doing something? Or you're like, they didn't know I didn't have like Karaj, I was fully like out there yet. But I felt like I was holding a part of myself back because it was something that was so core to my purpose that I felt that, and granted, I make sure that it doesn't compete with Target or anything. Of course, make sure if you're working on a company that competes with the company you're working at, like, okay, keep that silent. But in other situations, I kind of wish I was a little bit more forthcoming in terms of what I just was passionate about and cared about. And like, it exuded through. Like today, like, I was just talking to someone at Target who I was introducing myself to. And I told her that, like, yes, I work at Target, I do this. And another thing about me is that I also have a toy company. And it felt like I was unlocking another part of my identity that maybe I'd held back because I was so worried about, like, goodness, I'm going to get fired. I'm going to get this, da, da, da. But it actually helped enhance what I was doing in my job because I was actually being more aware of what I was doing at work because I knew I had limited hours to focus on my business in the background and work on it separately. So then I really made sure I was being very sharp in my job. So they couldn't question the fact that like, oh, I can do my job and, you know, like I'm killing my job and I'm working on, you know, working my business on the side. Like, you know, I think it was just a key part of me. Like I said, like Karaj Dolls was something that has always just stood with me since I was in high school, even when I didn't know what the name was. And I felt like every time I tried to suppress it, it always kept coming back. something was reminding me, like, man, you gotta pursue this, like, you gotta pursue this. And I just kept holding it in every time. Like, I felt like I was holding it back, a part of my identity. And granted, don't tell everybody your business. You don't gotta tell, if you don't trust the person, if you're not cool with them at work, like, you there's no need to know. But I think it was something that, as I was starting to just work on further on Courage Dolls and just to explore more about who was the audience I'm trying to work, like, how do I think about the product and development of it? I had some really awesome, great friends who were my coworkers, who were actually some of the biggest supporters. I don't know if people will be surprised by this, but a number of people who've actually brought my dolls in the past like couple months have actually also been my coworkers and who've been honestly the most supportive. And I think now during COVID, it seems even like more likely that more people are going to have businesses or passion projects on the side. Like, I know I have coworkers who are telling me now that they started things on the side, that they started like creating earrings, or they started, you know, doing a baked goods type of business, or they are doing a nonprofit, or they're doing. I've had so many more coworkers in the past couple months, Mike, in light of COVID and in light of being home, who've been going deeper into their passion project because they've had time to think about it. And they're like, you know what? Like, and granted, if you have that opportunity to be at home, because I know not everyone can work remote, but I've seen even a greater opportunity now in light of being on lockdown and everything, where I'm seeing more passion projects start to come to life and people either talking about it on social, but more people just embracing it. I don't see how companies anymore can have the existence of their employees without them being able to also have part of themselves as also pursuing another project, because it also like, it helps just like build those transferable skills. And so I think just, I know that was a long statement, but I think now is probably even more of a better time than it was for me 4 years ago to be able to pursue creating a business on the side or doing a passion project, just because we live in a landscape where I think it even allows to enable that even more so. And make it more common versus taboo.
So along this journey, are there any books or resources that really stand out to you that you'd want to share with the people? Maybe one to three?
Yeah. One book that I'm reading right now that I'm still working through is like Hacking Growth. It's a book that, you know, it's about, you know, growth hacking. If you're in a space of marketing or marketing strategy, like, it's just, I think, from what I've heard, has been like a staple book to really understand how to grow your business in a way that like can accelerate in opportunities that pertain to who your audience is or key benefits or competitive advantages that your company could be really eyeing for, whether it be content or whether it be new tools or products. Like, I really think it's a great book. And kind of, it was, to my knowledge, one of the first kind of books I started talking about, like, hacking, growth hacking, before I think the phrase became so popularized now. Another book that I am reading, just for the sake of just reading, is Hood Feminism. Hood Feminism, it is such an amazing book that speaks to the intersectionality of feminism, because at times feminism is not spoken, at least in the mainstream, should I say. It's typically through the lens of wealthy white women. And this book does a really awesome job of dissecting feminism and where it's the good points of it and where the bad points of it. And the bad points in terms of like ignoring the intersectionality of race, ethnicity, ableism, gender identity and gender and sexual gender expression, sexual orientation, socioeconomics. Like, I think the ignoring of poor Black women who are also just as much a part of the conversation of feminism as a rich Black woman is something to not be ignored. So I really think this book is awesome for men, women, non-binary people. Like, I think Hood Feminism is great. And then what's another book that I read? One book I'm reading now, just for the sake of joy, is this book called Black, it's not necessarily a book, it's an art collection called Black Futures. And it came out last year, and it's by Kimberly Drew and Jenna Wortham. And it is literally a collection of, it's like the Black encyclopedia of Black art mm-hmm. of the modern day and memes and everything. And it's 500 plus pages of just inspiration of Black culture and the Black experience today. And I look at it, it's a coffee book type table book, but it is, it brings me so much joy. And it just, it's just amazing to see Black people just in our, just being Black. whether it be your hood rat Black, your ratchet Black, your bougie Black, your stuck up Black, your scholarly Black, your artistic Black, your abstract Black. And so it came out last year. And I think it's phenomenal and just relaxing.
That's awesome. You know what's floating in my head right now is the name of your company. And I don't think I asked you the origin of that.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's always a very good question. So one day when I was in my ETNA class back at Babson, we were given the business canvas yes. document. I'm sure you remember that whole business canvas. Yep, with staple document. And I was writing down, I forgot what the question was, but I was writing down, what are the things that I want my brand to stand for? What do I want people, kids to take, young girls, should I say, to take away from it? And I said, I want girls to be bold. I want them to be fierce. I want them to be unstoppable. I want them to be kick-ass. And then the word courage just kept, I want them to have courage. That kept popping up. And so what I did is I went to dictionary.com and I looked up the origin of courage, and it was courage without the U, and it worked the same in Latin and Spanish and French. And I just honestly did a little mm-hmm. flair to it and called it yes. garage. And that was
awesome. Yeah, I see. I know the word for Haitian Creole or / French. So when I hear it, I already knew. It's a very important word. It's a very important word to me and growing up. And as I think about my elders and the thing that they would tell you, prends courage, which means, well, literally translates like take courage. But it's like, you know, have courage. Courage. When I think about it, it's very powerful. It's very powerful, you know.
Yes.
So the last question I have for you is, where can people learn about you and your project?
Yes. So you can learn more, shop more, support more, invest more in Courage Dolls at www.couragedolls.com. That's CORAGE Dolls, DOLLS.com. You can follow us at Courage Dolls, you know, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, you know, and just kind of, you know, hit me up as well in those spaces. Definitely. We had a recent site relaunch, and so really working on building out further some of the amazing ways of, you know, how we're trying to connect further with our audience. And so support our brand. And
Flora, I really appreciate you taking the time to connect.
Thank you so much, Mike. I truly, you asked some amazing questions. Like, these are things I had to like pause and like, these are really thoughtful and really in-depth questions. So thank you. And thank you for providing a platform for those who are either actively pursuing their passion while working, wanting to figure it out, they want to do it, ready to take a leap, or just want to take some more time and think about it.
I hope you enjoyed that episode and found tremendous value in it. If so, don't keep it a secret. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram, our handle, No More Reasonable Doubt. Every so often, I create a free resource to help you take your purpose or passion from a dream to an actual project. You can always find that resource at nomorereasonabledoubt.com/free-gift. This is Mike Ambassador Bruni for No More Reasonable Doubt. Remember, some dreams stay dreams, some dreams come true. It's on you.